I had the opportunity of meeting our speaker, Russ Horman, a few months ago, and we discussed the possibility of Russ coming before our group and sharing his experience with you. In speaking with Russ and going through his book, I found that not only the background that Russ had, but also the circumstances surrounding his experience and the events that changed his life would really be something special for us to hear. So I'll give you just a little brief overview because I really want Russ to be able to tell his story. Russ had a pretty difficult childhood in the sense that from a very early age, at the age of 8, his life was changed by an unfortunate run-in with the police department when he was arrested for a crime that he didn't commit. When it was proved that this crime wasn't committed by him, the officers that had arrested him at such a young age and essentially treated him quite badly, there was a lot of hard feelings by those officers that ended up spreading to other officers, and as a result, it led to pretty much a lifelong run-in with the police. Some positive, many negative experiences, but it kind of formed Russ's life. It led him into a different type of crowd. Then his life changed dramatically on October 8th, 2001. Russ was having a party at a home with several friends, one of whom was a girl that he had been dating. And unbeknownst to Russ, the girl did set him up for a home invasion. And during the course of that home invasion, Russ was shot 4 times. With that, I will introduce our speaker tonight, Russ Horman. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
That's better. For a second there, I thought I was a groundskeeper at a cemetery or something. A lot of people, but nobody listening. By the raise of hands, how many people here are afraid of dying? Not very many. That's good. Well, I'm not afraid of dying. I maybe are a little bit afraid of how I might die, like maybe getting eaten by sharks or a bear or something, or maybe on vacation flying to California and all of a sudden I'm not flying anymore. That could be pretty scary. But the truth is, dying could be one of the most wonderful things that will ever happen to you. I've told this story many times before, but I've never had to fill an entire hour before, so I'm going to read a lot from my book. I told this story to a lot of people, many involved with the Sundance Film Festival, and I got a lot of great feedback about how this would make such a great movie. I even got asked by one person who I'd have play me in the movie. And I thought to myself, maybe Brad Pitt or Matt Damon. But it had to be someone young, good looking, with a nice physique. And then the person I was talking to said, oh, so you don't want this to be realistic then? I said, oh, thanks a lot. If someone ever told you that they got shot 4 times and it was the best thing that ever happened to them, you'd probably think that they were a little crazy or that they'd had a pretty bad life. Well, in my case, you'd be right about in just about either way. I did get shot 4 times and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I had some rough times in my life and I am probably a little bit crazy. But that's not why it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I should have died at least a dozen times from all kinds of different reasons. I've had some unbelievably crazy things happen to me, but I never died. Well, I should say, I never stayed dead. I even had my life saved one time by a little bunny rabbit. Yes, you heard it right, a little bunny rabbit. I was driving to southern Utah a few years ago. It was getting late, and it was getting dark, and I was driving a little bit too fast. I was making my way up a beautiful red rock canyon when this bunny rabbit ran right out in front of me. I hit the brakes and yelled, "Stupid little bunny!" Then I realized I was on a hairpin turn and there was about an 80-foot drop-off. I realized if that stupid little bunny wouldn't have ran out in front of me, I would have went right over that cliff, and I know surviving that fall would not have been possible. I looked in my rear view mirror for that little bunny and it was nowhere to be found. But there was a girl standing there, kind of out of place, that I hadn't seen before. And I remember the look on her face like it was yesterday. I thought to myself, maybe she's seen the same thing I seen. There was no place for that little yellow bunny to go. It just disappeared. I believe to this day, there was no little bunny. I believe that was divine intervention. That was just one out of many times I should have died. It wasn't until I was shot 4 times that I left my body and I went to the spirit world. I just decided not to stay there. I was given another chance to come back to my body. I had a lot of questions about death and God before that happened. But when I woke up, I knew the answer to everything I ever wondered about. It was like I had my own awakening or an epiphany. The first thing I found out was, and I know this for a fact, without any doubt in my mind, that the best thing that will ever happen to you is you will die. If you live right and are generally an honest person who makes good choices and doesn't hurt anyone, we all will have, each of us, a magnificent transformation from this life into our next phase of existence. I know that if you were born a happy, healthy child and you lived every day of your life without a single care, happy from sun up to sundown, you never got sick or as much as scratched your finger or ever shed a single tear. When you die and you shed this body, you will have a magnificent transformation. It is electrifying, exhilarating, liberating, wonderful, magnificent transformation. It is then that you will realize that every day that you were alive in this body on this earth, you were suffering in comparison to how good you will feel when you leave this body. Then you will advance and have a magnificent transformation into your next phase of existence. That is, of course, if you live a good life, you're generally honest, and you don't hurt anyone. If you knew how wonderful it was to leave this body, you would kill yourself to get there. But please don't do that, because you will realize that you could be in a timeless, endless nightmare. We all need to do what is right and just let death, or our next phase of existence, come in its own due time. I don't have a death wish. I used to be a little bit afraid of death. But now I look forward to that day when my life here on earth ends. But I do look forward to experiencing that magnificent transformation into my next phase of existence. The end of this phase of existence is the beginning of another. I guess I better back up a little bit and start from the beginning. I was born in 1964, just a few blocks away from here, as a matter of fact, to two hard-working parents, honest parents. We went to church regularly. My mom was always there for me whenever I needed. My father, not so much. He seemed to always be working 2, 3, and 4 jobs to keep a roof over our head to make sure that we never went hungry. I thank God for them and the sacrifices that they made for me. Every once in a while I have to stop and imagine you in underwear or something so I don't let this get too emotional. I thank God for them and the sacrifices they made for me. I'm a very, very lucky. I'm the youngest of 4 with 1 brother and 2 sisters. Great memory I had, I was playing cards with my mom, Crazy Eights. My mom was never too busy to make time for me. That would always make me so happy. It was one of those days that my life, I believe I was about 8 years old, I was robbed of my childhood. My life would take a turn for the worst. It would change dramatically, and I would begin down a dreadful pathway of misery, self-destruction, and discontent. I didn't do anything to deserve it, but I became a victim of one of society's ugliest of secrets. My life was about to change for the worst, and it would never be the same again. It was a major turning point in my life. School was out for the summer, and I was enjoying one of those games with my mom. We lived on a quiet street where all our neighbors knew each other's business. There really wasn't ever too much going on, so whenever police would show up, that's where everybody had their nose. As we played cards, I noticed a police car pulled up in front of my house. My mother and I gasped and said, "I wonder what they'd be here for." They made their way up to the front door. One was a sergeant of the South Salt Lake Police Department. The one person I blamed for many years for ruining my life. As soon as he reached the top step, he began to knock. My mother answered the door, and they asked if they could talk to me. My mother did not see any harm at that time, but if she would have known or had any idea what they were going to do, I'm sure she would have not let them talk to me alone. She called me into the room, and they took me outside with them. They wasted no time at all, put me in handcuffs, and threw me in the back of their police car. I was in tears, as I was only 8. That is when they told me if I confessed to a particular crime, if I didn't confess to a particular crime, that they were going to take me straight to jail and throw away the keys. It was breaking into a junkyard down the street, a crime I didn't commit. But if I confessed, I could go back into my house. I didn't do anything about it. I didn't know anything about it, but I didn't want to go to jail, so I confessed. They told me that in a few days I'd have to talk to a detective. Then they let me back into the house. It was a long 5 days I had to wait to talk to those detectives, and it was very hard for a kid that was only 8 years old to try to comprehend what was going on. I had a lot of unanswered questions about what was going to happen to me. I didn't want to go to jail, and I was very scared about what was going to happen. I went to talk to the detective about a week later, and they asked me, "So how'd you do it?" I said, "I don't know." They said, "What do you mean you don't know?" And I said, "I don't know." And they said, "Well, you don't know because you didn't do it?" And I says, "Yeah." He says, "I know you didn't do it because we have the guys here that did it, and they don't even know who you are." He then asked me, "Why did you say you did it?" I said, "Because the cops said if I didn't say I did it, they were going to take me straight to jail and throw away the keys." And he told me, "Don't ever say you did something you didn't do." I found out later that those two police were reprimanded for what they did to me. From that point on, they made my life miserable. Those two cops in the South Salt Lake Police Department harassed me. They bullied me. They got kids to bully me in school till I decided to drop out of school and society as much as possible to avoid getting hurt and harassed all the time. I was targeted, patted down, and ripped off every day. They seen me. If I had anything of value, they took it. I was thrown in detention so many times I forgot the count. When I got old enough to drive, they impounded my car. They turned the whole entire police force against me. Needless to say, I grew up hating police. I believe that kids should grow up knowing that police are good people, that they should believe they can trust them and believe the police are there to help and protect them. It is a shame I grew up afraid of cops and at a relatively young age, fear turned to hatred. Those two cops did everything possible to make my life a living hell, and it wasn't just them. As I said earlier, one of them was a sergeant, and he turned the whole entire police force against me. I believe that he spread the word that I was some kind of enemy to the force. I don't know what he told all those other officers in the force to hate me, but whatever it was, it worked. At that point, I started doing drugs and drinking. It wasn't long after that I made getting high an escape from reality. In school, well, when I was in school, there were all the cliques, the jocks, the preps, the teacher's pets, the straight-A students, like my brother, the nerds, and yes, the stoners, like me. I seemed to get along pretty much with everyone back then because I was a class clown and I loved to joke around so much. I definitely thought it was more important than my studies. in class one time, somebody yelled, "Shut up," or something like that. And the teacher said, "Hey, in my classroom, there are three things I don't ever want to hear. Number one, I don't care. Number two, stupid. And number three, shut up." I yelled out, "Shut up, stupid, I don't care." The entire class roared out in laughter at that point. And that was when I just took on the responsibility of being the class clown. Needless to say, the teacher didn't find that very amusing. I was a member of the crowd that had long hair and liked party, and that was the kind of people police loved to focus on. Back then, it was okay for cops to randomly pull you over and search you, and if you had long hair, you were a prime target. I was already a prime target in South Salt Lake anyway, so I didn't find any reason to hide my feelings towards any cops. When I turned 16 and got my driver's license and a car, I thought I'd be safe from, but the harassment went to an entirely new level. I only had my driver's license for about 6 months when I got it taken away from me. I treated myself and self-medicated myself for depression and drugs, for depression with drugs and alcohol for many years. I'd sit in my driveway and get as messed up as I possibly could before I'd stumble into my bedroom at night. There were so many times I amazed myself how I never overdosed and died. I was surprised at how much my body could take. I can't believe how many times I escaped death. Looking back on it, it seems like it can't be true. I got my life saved so many times, but that wasn't until I was recovering from getting shot 4 times that I truly started to think about how amazing it was and how many times I escaped dying. One time when I was about 12 years old, our annual trip or visit to Idaho, where my mom was from, my grandfather had a dairy. We used to go up there every summer for a little while to visit and help out. At the time, my uncle and my cousins were rounding up cattle and herding them to another pasture to graze. Most everyone had a horse to ride, but I just was running alongside. As we were herding them down the road, we came along a section of field that was fenced off with old logs, and there was a bull in there. That bull had seen us coming, and I guess he wanted to run along with those cows because he used his horns to literally tear apart that log fence, and he got out. The bull started running along with the cows, and we were all trying to keep them separated from the road and from the cows. Without thinking, I ran in between the cows and the bull turned on me. Before my uncle could get there on his horse, the bull charged right at me as fast as he could, and at last second, the bull stopped in his tracks, and it seemed like he looked right behind me, and then he darted back the other direction. I turned around to see what was behind me that could have spooked that bull into the other direction, but I didn't see anything. My uncle rode over there, and he was yelling at me. He's in the front row right here. Thanks for yelling at me. "You could have got yourself killed. Should have got yourself stomped to death." It wasn't until later that someone said there was another person there on a horse behind me when that happened, but they didn't see where that girl disappeared to after everything was said and done. We just figured she just was in the right place at the right time and went on her way. Another time I hung myself in the haunted house, not to commit suicide, just for fun, because I was frying on acid. My best friend Derek and I was a volunteer at the March of Dimes Haunted House for Halloween every year. We were all dressed up walking around scaring people, and there was a dummy hanging by its neck. I don't know what made me think of it, but I took the dummy down, and I put the noose around my neck, and I began to pull myself up by my own strength. I hung there for a few moments while Derek laughed, and people were walking by looking at me. I remember one person saying, "Oh, that's not real, it's fake." It was then I started to lower myself down. I didn't let the rope slowly slide through my hands. I actually would slide fast a few feet and then grab on and stop, and every time my entire body weight would bounce by my neck. I don't know how I avoided breaking my neck. I did that 3 or 4 times till I finally hit the floor. I looked up to see some girl looking at me, and when I stood up and turned around to say something to her, she was gone. I don't know for a fact that hanging myself would have killed me, but I do think that it could at least made me a cripple. I don't know if that was the acid or for some reason I thought it would have caused much more pain than it did. I really didn't get much thought, although I did have a nice rug burn on my neck for a while. Small price to pay for escaping death. There were so many reasons, so many times, that I could have died, that there was one reason why I lived. I could go on describing almost endlessly all the times I escaped death. Like one time, for example, I was almost kidnapped and beheaded in the Philippines. I won't go more into that, but it is an amazing story. So many amazing stories. I don't know how all this time I wasn't invincible or just lucky. I had a guardian angel. It seemed like in every instance I escaped death, I seen the same familiar face. It was my guardian angel there helping me every time, but I didn't even notice until later, and I thought about it. She was there when I was driving too fast, and she made me slow down. I ran out in front of a charging bull, but he turned and ran the other direction, and she was there then, too. I don't know who she was, but she was there. I know we all have spirit guides who are there to help us. Most of the time, they are distant relatives or loved ones who have passed over. Sometimes, there are soulmates from a past life. But I know we all have spirit guides. They help us with our lives by influencing us to do what is right because they care about us. They deliver our messages for us. They hear our prayers. They know what we want and what's in our heart. They help us, they guide us, and they love us. I used to go to church, but I stopped at a young age when I started doing drugs. I dropped out of school, and I really didn't care about anything but getting wasted all the time. I did that for many, many years, up until the time I was shot in home invasion in 2001, my death day, October 8, 2001, about a month after 9/11. I was 37 years old. From about that time I stopped going to church until I got shot, life basically was all about getting wasted. I loved to party, although from the beginning of that period, I started feeling this emptiness inside of me that steadily grew larger and larger, and as the years went by, I couldn't get rid of it or fill it with anything, and I tried just about everything. I couldn't fill it with dope or alcohol or girls. No matter what, the emptiness wouldn't go away. It just kept getting bigger and deeper with every passing day, and with every passing day, I struggled between good and evil. The one thing I did do was work hard and kept a job. I had to support my habit somehow. I was a painter, and I was good at that. I liked painting, big jobs, especially like schools and hospitals, but I could do any project that came along. I'd work hard all day and party every night. It was one of those nights partying that I was shot in a robbery. I call it my death day. I was seeing a young woman at the time named Joni. It was about a year or so later that I found out Joni was behind the whole robbery thing. It was her idea. She was the one who invited the guys over who shot me. I wasn't well off by any means, but I guess I had some things that she wanted for herself. I spent the last 4 months on almost a constant party. I thought the party scene was the best way to go. I was my only and favorite victim. I had just bought a Victorian-style home, and it was a great partying place for me and a growing number of friends. Approaching 2:30 a.m. on my death day, partying was coming into a full swing. Two young men whom I never met before came to my house as guests of Joni. It was a perfect setup for the home invasion. A knock at the door interrupted me and my friends, and I went to the door. I invited them to come in. "I hope you don't mind," said Joni. I let them in. We walked back to my bedroom, and I picked up the party and where we left off. Not long after that, one of them pulled out a gun. It was a 38. He then started yelling at me, "Give me your money, give me everything." He was pointing the gun mainly at my chest, but also at the other guests. I didn't even think about it a single moment. I just acted. If I would have thought about it, I'm sure I wouldn't have done what I did next. I don't know if it was bravery or just stupidity, but my impulse was just to act and not think. So I did. I acted just like Jackie Chan or Bruce Lee and what they would do in the movies, or tried to anyway. Let's just say it worked out better in the movies. I took a swing at the gun. When I hit the barrel of the gun with my right hand, it turned in the shooter's hand and pointed at my right side. That was when the first bullet exploded from the nozzle and went in and then out my right side. It traveled through my body and then into the desk behind me, just inches from where Joni was sitting, their accomplice. The first shooter kept turning, and then the second bullet hit me in the chest, and that's where it still rests in my body today. I found out later that they leave bullets in people all the time. One doctor told me that bullets are only dangerous when they're moving. I thought I was protecting Joni, but she was probably the safest one in the room at the time and stood to make out with most of my money. My adrenaline was pumping out of control, probably from the combination of the excitement and the glass pipe we were sharing. The gun hit the floor, and I started punching the shooter in the face. He turned and started running towards the back. I chased him through the house and caught up with him 5 feet from the back door. Again, I started punching him, and he hit the floor, covering his face. At this point, his partner rushed in, and I couldn't see him standing behind me. He also had a gun. It was a .22 pistol. He shot me 2 times in the back, point blank. Those 2 bullets took the fight out of me. The party was officially over at that point. Later I found out those 2 bullets took out my heart, my lung, my bowel, my bladder, my small intestine, and my esophagus. I hit the floor and I called out for my roommate Larry, a very large XMP from the Marine Corps. When the 2 shooters heard me call for him, they hit the bricks as quick as they could. Larry rushed into the room along with Joni. I was laying on my back. I felt my right lung filling up with blood, so I turned on to my left side. Joni was holding my head, crying, "Please don't die." Not long after that, the police showed up, and Joni vanished. The police started asking me questions. Who did this? I was trying to keep myself from going into shock. I should have said, "Ask Joni. They were her friends." But apparently, she bailed as soon as the police showed up. Instead, I said, "Just get me an ambulance." The ambulance soon arrived, and the paramedics started on working on me right away. They told me they were going to roll me over on my back, but I told them I can't lay on my back because I feel my lungs filling up full of blood. They rolled in a gurney and put me on a backboard, keeping me on my left side. Then they strapped me on a gurney. As they loaded me in the ambulance, I kept myself cool by talking to them all the way to the hospital. I knew from experience that if you kept yourself from going into shock, that's the best way to survive any traumatic injuries. I noticed that in the emergency lane of the hospital, the doctors and nurses were waiting outside for my arrival. As soon as the gurney hit the ground, they started working on me. First, a nurse started cutting off all my clothing, and I remember thinking to myself how cute she looked in her uniform. And then telling her I generally don't go this far on the first date, but I'd make an exception in her case. She had an unusual look on her face, and I was wondering just what she was thinking. She then put a mask on my face, and I put my hand up to stop her and said, "No, don't make me sleep. Just fix me while I'm awake." She said, "No, you're going to sleep, but don't worry, you'll be okay, we're the best around." She put the mask on me, and my thoughts soon were on my family and my mom. I didn't think I had another 15 minutes, I just wanted to tell my mom I love you before I die. I spent the rest of my waking moments thinking about my loved ones. I didn't want to go to sleep. I knew if I did, I was going to die. And I did die for a short time. Right after I remember the nurse putting the oxygen mask on my face, I was weighted down with sadness. I thought of my family, mostly my mother. I thought about how much I loved her, and I didn't have a last chance to tell her. I wasn't afraid of dying. I just felt so bad because I knew she would cry for me, and I never wanted to make her cry. Everyone has a birthday and a death day. We usually just don't celebrate the latter. Suddenly, I wasn't feeling pain anymore. I felt relaxed. At first, I noticed myself in midair looking down at my own body. I knew it. I told her I didn't want to go to sleep. I knew it. I knew I was going to die. The tension was thick in the air, and I could see the people working on me were very stressed out. What was going on? It was then that I noticed a light. A light that was getting brighter and brighter. It was brighter than the noonday sun, and it still increased, even brighter, moment by moment. It was changing. I was changing. This transformation was incredible. No words can explain how magnificent it felt. Then I remember seeing like a sun shadow. It was like a shadow you would see on the ground when you're walking on a bright, sunny day, only exactly opposite. It was light. It was a light, with light radiating off of it. Brighter, almost blindingly. I could hardly look at it, but it was way off in the distance, like at the end of a long tunnel. I remember all the weight being taken off of me, and somehow a sense of peace taking over my body. White billowing clouds began to fill the room and surround me. I felt weightless as I began to rise up into the air. The clouds opened up around me and welcomed me like a warm blanket. I was surrounded by gold chains hanging down, suspended into the unknown, and holding crystal stairs. I was gliding up the stairs, only making contact with every other three or four. I raised my head up to see beams of light reaching down around me. I felt my body filling with energy, almost an electric-like sensation. It was almost like being under clear water, how the rays of sunlight surrounded me and rose above my head and into the air, unsure where they went or how far. The energy was still increasing in my body, getting stronger and stronger until I felt like I was about to explode, only not painfully. It was exhilarating and fantastic. It was wonderful. I wanted to burst. I remember arriving at a place of extreme beauty. I don't think it was heaven. I believe it was a spirit world. Fields of flowers, colors that I'd never seen before. They were all so beautiful. I was a painter, and I thought I'd seen every color possible, but I was surprised at the vibrancy. The sunset and the clouds and the sky were also beautiful, more beautiful than I'd ever imagined. In a way, similar to Earth, but I knew this was not Earth at all. There was a beauty all around me not like I'd ever experienced before. I remember looking at myself. I was younger, somehow renewed. I looked at my body. And where there were scars, there were no scars anymore. My only one tattoo was gone. Well, I had to be resembling my best state of health. I felt great, no pain or anything. I was drawn through the fields to a place covered by mist and fog like clouds to a small group of people my own age, like myself. They turned and looked at me and welcomed me with open arms. I didn't recognize them, but somehow they seemed so familiar. I remember one face in particular, and that face I knew I had seen her before many times. I knew I'd seen her every time I had a near-death experience. She was there when I almost hit that rabbit. She was there when I hung myself. She was there when I was in a car accident. She was a girl behind me when I faced down that bull. She was there when I saved a girl from drowning. I don't know who she is. But I know she must be my guardian angel. She must be my spirit guide. I know her from somewhere else, but I just can't put my finger on it. I reached out for her. I was stopped in my tracks. I wanted to continue, but I could not. I couldn't go any further. I was denied any further advancement. But why? Why couldn't I go on? I didn't know why. All I knew was I wanted to, but I couldn't. It was unbelievably sad. A feeling of sorrow came over me like I'd never felt before in my life. Why can't I go on? It was like someone showed you something so wonderful and they're not letting you have it. It wasn't fair. My last look at her warm eyes seemed to put me generally at ease. In a look, she told me, "It's not your time." That was my near-death experience. The next thing I remember feeling was pain, extreme and intense pain. It was 11 days later from the time that nurse put the oxygen mask on me. I had endured 4 major surgeries to save my life. My survival amazed everyone. I should not have survived, but I did survive. Why did? I don't know. I've struggled with that for many years. I knew there had to be a reason why, but at the time it escaped me. Everyone I knew told me the same thing. I should have died. I was lucky to have lived, and there had to be a reason why I did live. 2 bullets were taken out of me. 1 bullet went in and all the way through me, and 1 I still carry in my chest today. I will never forget how intense the energy was that filled my body and how wonderful I felt during the near-death experience. I used to be afraid of dying, but now I look forward to it. I don't have a death wish, but I can't wait for that day to come that I can go back to the light. It will be a great and wonderful transformation. I was in a coma for 10 days, and I remember my body was in immense pain for several weeks after I woke up. But I also felt an intense body high from the electrifying experience that my spirit had gone through. As time went by, that electrifying body high slowly subsided and turned into a numbness that I still experience to this day. Other things were made known to me from that experience. Most important, I know that when this life here on earth is over, a new one begins. You are relieved of all your worries and pain and problems, and you begin an existence that is meant to be. I know we must live our lives here on earth and learn what it's like to suffer and to love and to learn what pain is and to learn compassion. We also have a chance to make choices, use our free agency, and make decisions that take us down the pathway of our existence that makes us who we are and who we will be. One of the shooters was an illegal alien from Mexico who had been deported several times and was the leader of a gang recruited by Joni. The other one was a 17-year-old kid who was a new member of this gang. The leader was a bad guy, and I didn't care if they locked him up and threw away the keys. I kind of felt sorry for the other kid. I know that sounds stupid. I later found out that he lived with his grandparents because his mother was nowhere in sight and he never knew who his father was. I felt like he had kind of a hard life. I know from my own life growing up, when you're young, you make stupid decisions and mistakes. And I felt sorry for him. Yes, he almost killed me, but I know that if he wouldn't have shot me, they most likely would have shot him. He was in the same detention center that I spent so much time in until he turned 18, and on his birthday, they took him to prison. They were both convicted of aggravated attempted homicide that carried 5 to 15 years. After 5 years, I went to that kid's parole hearing and I pled for his release. He was surprised to see me there and even more surprised to hear me say, "Give him a chance." He wanted to change his life. I told them to give him a chance, keep him on a short leash, and if he messes up, bring him back. Another thing I learned is don't leave anything undone or unsaid because you never know when it's going to be your last day. You never know when you're going to get shot or hit by a bus And that is why I always tell my mom I love her. I remember when I had that nurse put that mask on my face, and I thought then it was too late. I learned so much when I was having my near-death experience. I'll do my best to share with you, because I believe that is one reason why I survived. If we lived every day of our life here on earth, happy, and we never shed a single tear, and we never got hurt, we will realize that our entire lives we were suffering every day in comparison to how we will feel when we leave this body and we go to our next phase of existence. I used to think he who dies with the most toys wins. Now I know that's not what matters. What matters is if you make a difference in your life. Did you make a difference? I hope I will. A few years after I woke up out of my coma, I started a nonprofit organization in the Philippines, helping starving children, literally starving to death. I know when you see those commercials on TV, those kids in Africa, as soon as the commercial's over and the game's back on, it's out of sight and out of mind. But I was in the Philippines, and I had to step over these kids to get to an ATM to get to cab fare. And I seen it face first. They are dying. They don't even have clothes. So I give everything I can to these kids. I wrote this book to raise money for them. I give everything I can to those kids. On my Facebook page, there's hundreds of pictures of these kids. One is a picture of a 4-year-old girl raising her 1-year-old brother on her own, begging for food and sharing it with him. 4-year-old. And that picture is on my Facebook page. No lie. That is my passion, to help those kids. So I hope I will make a difference in this life. When I woke up, I thought it was the next day. It was 11 days later. I spent 10 days in a coma. I had undergone 4 major surgeries, one being the most dangerous surgery known, next to brain surgery, emergency lung and heart at the same time. The stitch count was lost after 375. First thing I heard when I woke up was something that I'd never heard before in my life, and that was my dad crying. That can't be true. The most macho man in the world. After 21 days, I could pass a cardio and lung test. Because I had no health insurance, I was put into a wheelchair and literally poured out on the front lawn of the hospital. My hospital bill was $879,000. Can you imagine? Almost $1 million. I'd like to send that bill to Joni just to see the look on her face. I lost everything I owned. At the advice of the doctors, my parents prepared me for my funeral. They sold all my stuff and bought me a nice burial plot. But to everyone's surprise, I didn't die. Well, I should say, I didn't stay dead. I do remember having some moments of being out of my body and looking down at different scenes a couple of times. Once in the operating room and once in the recovery room. I know I should have died, or I should have stayed dead. At that time, I didn't know why I lived. I knew there had to be a reason why I did, and that I struggled for many years trying to figure that out. I did find out why I lived. I also learned forgiveness is for everyone. One of the things I remember from the spirit world is who I seen there. That was the last thing I remember seeing before I came back. I wasn't in the spirit world very long, but I learned a lot. I know that when you are dead, time is of no relevance. When you think about it, the only time when time is relevant is when we are alive here on Earth and we are aging and we're getting older, so time matters. But in our next phase of existence, time doesn't matter. There is so much we will never understand why we are alive here on Earth, but we will eventually learn and understand all we wish to know in our next phase of existence, and throughout all eternity, we will always have the opportunity to learn and grow. I used to have so many questions about God and religion before I got shot, things I'd never learned in church, but everything I ever wondered about God and religion, when I woke up, I knew the answer to. One thing was, how does God know everything you do? So he knows whether to send you to heaven or hell. Well, the answer to that is, before we were born in the pre-existence to earth, we are simple beings, or spirits, but we didn't understand very much. There is so much we needed to learn, like love and pain and sympathy, that we could never understand without getting a body. We needed to get a body to learn so many things. So we came to earth, and when we came to earth, we were born with incredible organs, such as a brain. It is inconceivable how marvelous this organ really is. We don't even use much of it. We only use a small part of our brain. If we could use our whole brain, we could make things levitate, we communicate without talking, we could be telepathic. If we used our whole brain, we could have extrasensory perception, we could be clairvoyant. All kinds of different things we could do if we could use our entire brain right now. There will be a time that we will be able to do all of those things in the future if we so desire. When we are born, our brain starts recording everything we do from our first breath till our very last. We take our brain everywhere we go, and everything we do and experience and learn, we save it like our own little movie. All those memories are stored in our brain. We record everything from our first to our last breath. And then when we leave our body, we have this magnificent transformation. Have you ever heard anybody say, "I see my life flash before my very eyes"? Well, that happens. It's called total recall. You take everything with you. All that accumulated knowledge when you die, you take that with you. When you eventually meet God, he knows everything you ever did, because you have that little movie there with you. And he sees everything. I learned that we advance from one phase of existence to another by gaining different levels of knowledge and experience. We have to gain a certain amount of knowledge before we can advance to our next phase of existence. Until we come to earth and get a body, we don't understand what pain and suffering is. We don't know what empathy or sympathy and many other things. We can't learn these things without getting a body. That is why we come here, to get a body so we can advance, so we can learn, and so we can advance to our next phase of existence. I learned that everybody goes through the same phases of existence, but everybody's phases are different because they are unique to each person. We all need to acquire the same basic knowledge, but we will ultimately choose different pathways to get there. Karma we create for ourselves will have the greatest impact on our happiness. This is something I struggle with on a daily basis, but I'm trying to get better. I'm sure we all have similar difficulties, but some more than others. It is important to be forgiving, although it is not easy. There are a couple reasons why I decided to write this book. One is I wanted to share some things I learned when I left my body and went to the spirit world. I was not gone long, but I learned so much. It is hard to understand how I could have learned so much in such a short amount of time. When I woke up from my coma, I quit all the drinking and drugs, and I have now been clean and sober for over 16 years. Thank you. I also went back to school, and now I have a bachelor's and a master's degree. Nobody is perfect, but we can all strive towards perfection so that we can all try to be the best we can be. I wanted to share my experience to people who need to hear that after we die and we leave our bodies, it's not over. It's really just the beginning of a new phase of existence. Thank you very much.
So what happened to Joni, and did she ever express remorse?
It's funny. I actually was driving down the road one time, and I looked up at there was a sheriff's bus that they used to haul prisoners from the jail to the courthouse. And I was stopped at a light, and I looked up. Guess who was in the van? And I seen she had a baby named Damien, and I can't remember if that was before or after I seen her in the jail bus, but I seen her mother with Damien shopping. We ran into each other, and she told me that Johnny was doing time for something.
Thank you very much for your message tonight.
You're very welcome.
When you went into the spirit world and you saw this field of flowers that were very vibrant, as you described, did you get a sense of, was it a sense of kind of deja vu or familiarity, like, hey, I'm home, this is home?
I had Uja Day. You know what that is? That's a feeling that you've never been there before. No, no, I'm just joking. I could have went a lot more in the spirit world. Some of the things I remember is it was an orange planet. One time I was on a beach, and I remember the wave and the water was like a greenish color. And as a painter, I know the pigments come from the way light reflects off of stuff, and that's how you get colors. Well, I know now, like the star of that solar system, the way that light's reflected, pigments made different colors that I didn't recognize before, because we have different light here. And that's why we had different colors there. But the colors were just incredible. And I looked up, and there was two moons. There was one so close, I felt like I just could reach up and touch it. It was massive, huge. And then there was another one way out further in the distance. I could have talked a lot about the spirit world. And it's amazing to me that when you're only gone 3 minutes, you learn so much. And it's incredible. And one of the reasons is because, like, when I was talking to my spirit guide, we weren't talking. It was communicating kind of telepathically. I could understand how she felt. She knew my feelings just by looking at each other. It was like we had a year's conversation just by looking at each other. It was just, and we'll all experience it. It's just magnificent. We are in such I want to say, like the caveman age right now. We think we know so much. We are in a stage we don't know nothing. We really don't know anything.
Thank you so much. In the Philippines, and I wanted to know about the cutting your head off thing.
Okay, so
you can make a good humor out of that one.
You know, it's interesting. My wife, I met her on Yahoo Singles, and I got to know her for 2 years. She's Filipino, and I finally went to the Philippines to meet her after I talked to her for 2 years online, and I was in Manila for a few days to meet her and some other family, and then we flew to another island called Cagayan de Oro, and I was there for a few days, and then we came back to Manila again, and when I was in Manila the second time, I was dragging my luggage along, and there was an area where all the people wait for the taxi cabs. I was walking over to that area. A taxi rolled up on me. He said, "Oh, don't wait in that line. Just jump in here." And I was like, I shouldn't have done it, but I'm like, okay. So I jumped in the car with him. Well, it turns out the Muslim people that live there look a lot like Filipinos. Unless you're Filipino, it's hard to tell them apart. Now I know. We jumped in the car with him, and I said, "Take me to my hotel," which is the Bayview Hotel. And so he's driving along, and he's going the other way, and I'm like, "No, you need to go this way." He didn't know that it wasn't my first time there. I knew my way around by that time, and he was going the other way, and I kept telling him, "No, go this way, go this way." He wasn't listening, so he kept going the other way, and we ended up in this really shady neighborhood, and he said, "No, you need to go in this building here, and you can call your hotel here and see if you still got reservations." And I go, "I got a phone right here that works, and I know I got reservations, and I'm going to call the cops right now." I used some choice words, and he decided to take me to my hotel. But as we were leaving, I looked, and there was a van there and an older couple, and these people were dragging them into this building. I didn't know what to think of it. I thought I was being set up to be robbed. Anyway, when I finally got back to the States, there was a news story about a couple being kidnapped and beheaded in the Philippines, and it showed their picture, and it was that couple. Oh, I called her up, and I said, well, we were just about beheaded, because we were abandoned. I didn't have money to give them, and they just kill you.
On a serious note, do you have children of your own?
So I have a 11-year-old daughter. I'm not able to have kids of my own. But this is one of the miracles in my life, and it could be one of the reasons why I survived getting shot. I was baby hungry, and I prayed to God all night long. I tried having a kid, and I just couldn't get pregnant. I tried. But I prayed all night long one night. I was on this cruise. And I prayed all night long, I want to have a baby so bad. God, please give me a baby. When we got back from the cruise, there was this homeless couple that I had been helping out, and I got him an apartment. I had my construction company, and I had an apartment, and I was paying his apartment, and he was working it off for me. One of the first things I did when I got back from my cruise, I went over to that apartment. I walked in the front door, and there was him and his girlfriend, and they had a little baby. And then another lady, and they had a little baby. And they were all smoking meth in the same room with these little babies. And I came unglued. You know, I should call the cops right now. This is actually my apartment and everything. And then the one girl said, you know, I've been living in a car. My boyfriend has been beating me up, and I use the baby as a shield to protect myself. And I looked at her baby, and the first look at her, I fell in love. I thought all babies were ugly. I seen this little baby, and she was the prettiest baby I ever seen in my life. She said, I need help getting on my own feet and all this stuff, big soft story. And I told the other couple, I said, if I ever catch you guys doing this again, I'll bring the cops over myself. And apparently they just relapsed. The other girls, she didn't know me from Jack the Ripper. And I said, let me take your baby, I'll show you where I live, and you come see her anytime you want, you just get yourself on your feet. And then she let me take her baby. And the next day, I called my attorney and had it all done legal and everything. She signed her parental rights over to me, and I've had her ever since. So she's the answer. She's 11 years old now.
You are a brave person, and I believe that's your mission, all these Filipino children. So I'm going to buy a couple of your books.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. And by the way, I've got to about 33 books, but anybody that makes a donation, I have about 70 of these gold pens that are stylus, but they're a gold pen, and they have actually flashlight. So I got 70 of those to give away for donations, and about 50 of other different colors to give away for any kind of donations I can get, and I got about 33 books.
So, did you ever come to know who your guardian angel was?
I'm pretty sure I knew who my guardian angel is. I think that we are attached, we are connected from a past life. I didn't believe in past lives, but I know now. I did have probably more than one past life, and I think we were connected from a past life. She is a beautiful woman. She kind of, I hate to say this, but she, yeah, I don't know if you guys watch American Idol, I don't know, what's it called? America's Got Talent. She kind of looks like that Mel B on there before she cut her hair. She's got curly hair, just real pretty. I believe that we were like together in a past life.
Also, you were 37 when you had your near-death experience. Have you encountered the South Salt Lake police since then? And has it gotten any better?
Okay, you know, the minute, this is true. The minute I cut my hair, they stopped bugging me. It was really weird. I got tired of it. I had this Trans Am, and I got pulled over. I got pulled over so many times in this Trans Am, in front of the judge, South Salt Lake judge, told me if she seen me in front of that court again, if that was something to do with my Trans Am again, that she would make me sell the car. I don't know if she's got powers to do that, but that's what she told me. And I cut my hair, and I never got pulled over again. And, of course, after I stopped, you know, getting high and drinking and all this stuff, those cops, when I was younger, they're not around anymore. My relationship with the South Salt Lake police, a million times better than it was, although I still have issues because, you know, I worked for the county for many years, so I know what it's like to work for the government. I still see so much laziness and incompetence and stuff like that that it sickens me. It really does. And I look at it a totally different way now. But my relationship as far as with the law goes, you know, I have not been in trouble. Like I say, I've been clean and sober for over 16 years. I have not been in trouble for longer than that. And, you know, while I was doing that, yeah, I was getting into trouble. But
as long as your hair is short, they have hairophobia.
And when I quit doing all the bad stuff, that stuff went away too. So
when the ambulance sort of dumped you off on the front lawn after all of your operations.
Oh, you mean after I was released? Yeah.
Yeah, and then you had, you know, $850,000 worth of debt. How in the world did your parents, even after selling everything, would probably not be able to come up. Any normal human being wouldn't be able to come up with that amount. How in the world did that ever work out?
Well, I got some money through Victims Reparation. Several thousand dollars. I got $50,000 for Victims Reparation that my mom and dad told me I need to give that to the hospital. And I wasn't in any condition to argue. You know, I look at it back now and I thought, well, I could use that money for a lot of things. But, no, they talked me into giving that money to the hospital, and every other bit of money that we had raised, we gave to the hospital. I basically had to file medical bankruptcy. And that's what medical bankruptcy is for. It is, if you got $1 million medical bill, you can spend the rest of your life in chains trying to pay that off. You will never get anywhere in life. So that's what that's for. I could have filed medical bankruptcy and not given them a dime, but I gave them everything I had because they saved my life. I hope someday that this is going to be a movie. I'll make a lot of money, and I would love to go out to LDS Hospital and give them $1 million and say thank you for saving my life. That would be a wonderful, that is a goal of mine. If I could ever get to a point where this could be a successful thing, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I just had a question about what you studied. Like, what did you get your master's in?
Okay, so I got my bachelor's in social science and early child development, and I got my master's in management for organizations. I chose that because I wanted to have degrees that would help me with my nonprofit organization, and I did it with Ashford University. I was working two jobs and raising my little girl on my own, and I did it online with Ashford University, a fantastic program that they have. You, and I would recommend them to, if any moron like myself can get a degree there, anybody can. They don't just hand them out, but it wasn't easy, but I tell you, it was a fantastic program.
How did you enjoy the Philippines when you was there?
Oh, I gotta tell you, I was the tallest, blondest person there. Everybody is short and black hair, and so I thought it was wonderful because I'm not a very tall person. They made me feel big. Something funny about the Philippines is every time you go into a building, they have the metal detector doors, and you go through that, and then you got to put your hands up like this, and then the guard pats you down, you know, make sure you don't have nothing. So every time I would go into a building like this, they'd pat me down, I go, like that. My girlfriend was so embarrassed. She was like, oh, knock it off. And the guards would always look at me like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. So, yeah, it was pretty, I had a lot of fun. I love the Philippines.